Thank you all for coming today on this appropriately gloomy day. I've written and rewritten the speech like 1,000 times in my head since the day, a little over 3 years ago, that my mother told me she had cancer. And somehow in my heart, I just knew that this was going to be it, you know, the thing that every child dreads, denies for as long as possible. In my mind, I crafted the speech over and over again, coming up with all sorts of clever, eloquent, and profound things to say. Sometimes they were incredibly witty, sometimes deep and moving. Sometimes I just moved myself to tears composing it. But now that I'm faced with the need to actually do it in earnest, words escape me and I feel such an emptiness that I just stare and stare at the computer screen without knowing what to say. It's a trite cliche of funerals to say of the deceased that she touched every person in the room in some profound way. And I suppose this is as good a place as any to start. Not because it's such a good cliche, but because in this case, it's undoubtedly and even embarrassingly true. My mother had a personality that could not be ignored, indeed refused to be ignored. And I think it could be safely said that every person who spent more than a little time with her came away with some sort of wow moment. I know the friends of mine to whom I introduced her always came away incredibly impressed. She was a big person, big in the sense of someone with a big soul who demanded to be treated seriously. You got the feeling of being with someone who knew things, who knew the answers to all of the questions, and of course, who was sure she knew the answers to all of the questions. She didn't know all the answers, of course, nobody does. And her life was tough. It was very tough. She was an immigrant, a single mom, stuck with four very unruly brats in the South in the 1960s. And this was a very rough thing, a hardship that really we can't even understand in this more accepting day and age. But she worked hard, went back to school, got her PhD when she was already in her 40s, and created a very successful career for herself as a professor. I can't say that she molded those four brats into outstanding citizens. None of us is Republican, for instance. But we went to school, we stayed out of jail, we got respectable jobs, and we created families of our own. And we were immeasurably enriched by this remarkable woman's intellect and class. Class. Now, there's a word she liked to use. She was very accepting of all people, no matter what their background, but she also liked to point out who had class and who didn't. And no wonder. She was a very classy lady. She had an aristocratic demeanor and a poise that just oozed class. I mean, really, you don't get this many names without having at least some class. She was classy in the way that she dressed, and in general in the way she presented herself to the world. She tried very hard to impress this on us boys with mixed success, but we definitely learned to recognize it when we saw it. It is for educators that the cliche about touching people's lives is used the most, but in her case, again, it's not just a cliche. There seemed to be an endless parade of former students coming to visit her from 10 and even 20 years back who had been changed in some way by their contact with her. In a good way, one must imagine. Perhaps there was some touched in a bad way, but they never came to visit. I was always impressed by this. For all the good teachers I myself had during my college career, I never had one I was really compelled to visit 10 years later. Yet there was something about my mother that drew these students like a moth to a flame. All who knew her as a very intelligent woman. In this area, it can perhaps be said she didn't live up to her potential. With a mind like hers, she perhaps should have published more things or even done something very big like go into government or something. Not the government would have had her. She was a bit of a lefty in a world in which lefties have become terribly unpopular. She hated hypocrisy and was always concerned about the underdog and problems of social justice. I remember her telling me once that she was a racist. I found this shocking. You know, I'd never known her to say anything the least bit racist, and in fact, she would slap me in the face if I tried to do something like that. But she explained that what she meant was that we were all born racists, that if left to nature, we always prefer those who look like us over those who look different, and that it takes a conscious effort of will to overcome this, that mere platitudes and good intentions and lip service to concepts of diversity and justice are not enough by themselves. And even now, the insight this represents takes my breath away. There were a lot of things my mom loved. She loved Benny Goodman and Glenn Miller, Blue Bunny sugar-free fudgesicles, Luciano Pavarotti and Andrea Bocelli, the entire book of Ecclesiastes, La Traviata, Machado de Assis, The Andy Griffith Show, and of course, Hyacinth Bouquet. And she loved to shop. I'm sure that TJ Maxx and Costco are flying their flags at half-mast today. She loved to go out. Damn, I'm funny. She loved to go out and look at all the new stuff out there and buy a substantial part of it. We have several closets full of clothes we need to do something with and an unbelievable quantity of shoes. The leather industry in Brazil and Indonesia are also in mourning today. She was also proud of, she was always proud of the bargains she made, and I remember her telling me not a few times about some jacket or skirt or blouse she had bought for 10 cents on the dollar at TJ Maxx. It's Jones of New York, she would say proudly. But I suspect that buying stuff, fun though that is, wasn't the only reason she loved shopping so much. She loved the social aspect of it. She would talk to the girl behind the jewelry counter and the checkout person and the other customers at the store. She loved talking to people, and I think this, as much as anything else, gave her a lot of satisfaction when she went out to the store. We all have ways in which we identify ourselves, roles that we play in the world at large. Some roles are bigger, leading roles, and some are the minor roles that we play. My mom's biggest role, the way she identified herself to herself, was not as a teacher or as intellectual or any of those external things. Her leading role, the one that defined, the one that defined and consumed her, was as a mother. And so all that stuff earlier about her potential was to illustrate that while she had the potential to do great things in the world at large, she saw her own potential, her major self-identity, in the fact that she was a mother, and that's where she put her emphasis. And I can safely speak for my brothers, sisters-in-law, children, nieces, and several of my friends when I say that she was a great mother to all of us. Not just by dint of where she stood in the family tree, but by constant deed and act, through thick and thin, from the time we were born up to her dying breath. How many times did she get up from her sickbed to try to make us something to eat when we came to visit? You couldn't argue with her, tell her to lie back down, that we weren't hungry, that we would fix something. She didn't believe us. She didn't trust us to do it ourselves. You would turn your back, and there she'd be, frying some potatoes or cooking some pork chops, always explaining, of course, that they didn't have any fat because she'd cooked them a special way that got all the fat, got rid of all the fat. It would drive me mad. The last 10 years were hard ones for her. Her back began to deteriorate, and her knees, and they both caused her excruciating pain, and then the cancer hit and metastasized, and suddenly the pain she had been in was nothing compared to what she was feeling. No one should be forced to endure pain as she did. A really bad cough today. And it wasn't easy for her, and it was hard to watch. Thankfully, the end, when it came, was without pain. Somehow she figured out how to block it and spent the last few days more peacefully than she had been for some time. Many years ago, I was seeing this woman, and she came to my house one night, to meet my mother. And after they met, my friend took me aside, and she said, "What's it like?" I didn't understand what she was talking about, and I said, what do you mean?" And she asked, "Well, what's it like to have a mother who's so fundamentally good?" I wasn't sure what she was talking about. After all, this is just my mom. But over the years, I've turned this question around in my head over and over, and I've come to understand it. My mother was profoundly and fundamentally good, with a capital G. Not good in the way we all can be at times, but good in the way that sticks to your ribs and hurts. And hurts when it's gone. It's almost done. So today, we finally bid adieu. The body in the box we're going to put in the ground today is not my mother. It's the torture chamber that she was imprisoned in for over 10 years. She's free of it now. And I, for one, am happy. Don't let my broken heart fool you. Thank you.